Welcome to episode 41 of Paper Talk, a monthly series of podcast interviews featuring artists and professionals who are working in the field of hand papermaking and paper art. I'm Helen Hebert, and today I'm talking with Vernon and Madeline Wearing, a father-daughter team based in Grand Rapids, Michigan, who recently launched their company, Papillon Papers. I fell in love with some of the gorgeous decorated papers I'd seen on their website and wanted to learn more about them, especially after reading that they call themselves design archaeologists. How cool is that? They dig through the past to find designs and decorated papers and resurrect them. In this episode, we talk about how they look through old books, mostly from the 19th century, seeking decorated and paper designs that appeal to them, and then bring these sheets that have been hidden under the covers of old books back to life. Listen to our conversation to find out how they are doing this. Enjoy! Okay, Madeline and Vernon Wearing, welcome to Paper Talk.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, it's great to have you guys. You're based in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and starting a new venture, or it's a little bit old. We'll talk all about it, but I'd like to talk a little bit about your backgrounds first. So Vernon, why don't you tell me about your career and interests in paper?
Okay, sure. Yeah. Well, thanks for having us. First of all,
yeah,
great. So my background is in bookbinding, really. I started out as a teacher and kind of a hobby bookbinder, and that slowly grew until we moved to Michigan, and then I went full-time into bookbinding, and which, you know, in the beginning it was mostly trade binding and thesis binding and just anything I could find and do. But as the business developed, it focused more and more on historical books and historical binding, restoration, and in the process. So I've been doing that for about 20 years.
And just private clients, or do you have some university clients, or
all sorts? So universities, colleges, rare book libraries, and dealers. Mm-hmm. I suppose the main collectors and dealers are really the two main, part of my clientele, because they have turnover.
Mm-hmm, right. You
know, dealers are constantly buying books and then they need to fix them up.
Right.
And so, but in the process, we see a lot of decorated paper, especially I really started getting attracted to the 19th century. That century is so interesting because the beginning is so different than the end in terms of design and structure and the way books were produced. And it's just like every kind of thing is in the 19th century. But the morphing of decorated paper in that period is also very interesting to me. Mm-hmm. And so that's where my interest in decorated paper started to develop or developed from seeing so many interesting samples.
Yeah. Right, right. Okay, and Madeline, you're Vernon's daughter, and you must have grown up around this. And so tell me about that and then how Papillon Papers began.
Yeah, so I can remember working in the bindery I worked there every summer basically in high school, and then a bunch just as I was a kid, I was always playing around with paper scraps, leather scraps, all that kind of thing in there. And then my work when I worked for the bindery was a lot of design stuff, so replicating labels and those sort of things so that we could, you know, reproduce the books historically. And so then in about April 2017, I believe it was, Dad Vernon came to me and was like, "Hey, I have this idea. I've been collecting all these papers. Would you be interested in getting involved somehow?" And then, so since then we started having kind of like weekly meetings. It didn't start out quite weekly. Now it's every week. But yeah, so that's kind of how I got on board with that.
Okay. And before we move into that business, I wanted to talk, because this is Paper Talk, a little bit about, I was looking at your website, Vernon, about pulp casting to repair page in a book.
Yeah, yeah. You know, a lot of times there'll be a piece of paper or a section of a page missing. One way to repair it would be to just tear a matching old sheet of, you know, waste paper from a rebind or something like that and try to just match the seam. That tends to look very, you know, very repaired.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I use a vacuum table and mask out the sheet and leave just a little space where there's where the missing paper is. And then I mix up some matching pulp in a blender. I have a whole hundreds of different pulp chips, I call them. So I can of different shades and tones, so I can try to match the original paper.
So where do you get those pulp chips? Are they just old sheets of paper that you've pulped up, or?
Yeah, it could be old, new cotton paper. You know, different kinds.
Okay.
I mix them up. I'll have like a, you know, a day where I make a whole bunch of these and add a little bit of different color, and then make a little chip, and then add a little bit of color, a different one, you know, so that I get all these different tones.
So you're actually adding pigment, or what? No, what are you adding? Color? Just sheets?
Different paper colors.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Uh huh. And then even with that, I still sometimes have to make a new batch so I can match the paper.
Sure.
And sometimes a sheet of, you know, an old sheet of paper will have like different tones.
Sure.
Around. So I may need to have like three different chips to, or three different pulps to fill in a sheet of paper like that. So then I, with the vacuum table on, I get the sheet wet and spoon in a little pulp, and the pulp will then naturally go to where there's nothing masked, and it'll go to those holes and fill in. And a spray bottle kind of assists in manipulating the pulp.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just let that run for a minute to get it a little bit dry. And then I usually back it or line it with a little Japanese, really thin Japanese tissue, to give it some strength. So yeah, that's the process. Sometimes there's, you know, ink missing from the, you know, printing missing.
Sure.
And I think the most interesting one I did was a, almanac, which had an engraving of like a battle scene by Paul Revere.
Uh-huh.
It's an 18th century woodcut by Paul Revere. And part of the corner was missing. So what I did, I first restored the sheet and then found a facsimile of the print and then printed that little missing section onto, through my inkjet printer, onto the sheet. So I had to make sure it all lined up and everything. And so I restored it. You could hardly tell that was even done. I mean, not that we're trying to deceive anybody, but, you know, we're also not trying to be too obvious.
Right.
This is a fine line.
Cool. Yeah. Okay. Well, Madeline, why don't you tell me about Papillon Papers, what it is?
Yeah, so it's basically, we're a design company, father, daughter, and we make historical patterns is what we're mostly focused on, and then transfer those into products like notebooks, cards, full sheets of paper. That's it so far. I would like to go in the other directions eventually, but yeah, and then we also do some certain things with different like historical frame type things. So making those are mostly inspired by historical designs less than our patterns, which are more directly taken from original patterns.
So you mean frames, picture frames?
Like decorative frames. So like border kind of things, if that makes
sense.
Yeah. Most of our notebooks are like half size, you know, 8.5 by 11 trimmed size. And then we have sheets in a few different sizes. So we've got 12 by 18-ish woodblock ones. And then we have 18 by 25, 19 by 25 sheets that were offset print by Holland Litho. They do those for us.
Okay, yeah. So let's talk about the paper and the printing. So let's start with the Holland Litho. You're printing them in the U.S. and their designs. How do you come up with these designs?
We have a large catalog of designs. A lot of them have come from end sheets in old books. And so we kind of collect those. And then when we decide we need a new pattern, we go back through and say, okay, which one is the most compelling to us? Which feels like it has some different things to it that our other designs don't currently have yet. You know, what'll add to our current library of patterns and that kind of thing. And then from there, we kind of go to, okay, how was this originally produced? Because certain papers are produced, were produced differently. So some of them were originally woodblock printed. And so then we kind of like to block print those to retain that texture and that sort of thing. And then other papers were lithographed, and those are the ones that we would more likely send to Holland Litho to do for us.
Okay, yeah, I want to read this phrase that you have on your website because I like, I really like it. It says, we are design archaeologists who dig through the past to find designs and decorated papers and resurrect them by reproducing and reimagining these often hidden examples of beauty. And then it goes on. You guys can visit the website to read the rest. I love that. And so, Vernon, you were talking also about you're interested in these designs. And so what is your design library? Is it like physical pages or in books or image? Do you take pictures?
Well, it's a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
You know, I, from my years of bookbinding, I do have a good collection of actual pages from books that were rebound. Now that that collection isn't growing that much because I'm working more with better books, and you know, a lot of times we try to keep all that with the book. So but I do have a collection of those. We also have a large collection of digitized library of digitized patterns. So those are mostly from books that I might have run across, and then I scan the end sheet, I take pictures of the binding, do all bibliographical information with it, so we can piece together kind of a taxonomy of papers of the 19th century. A lot of these papers were just ignored, and nobody's really done much research on them. There's a little bit out there, but there isn't much. And so I'm trying to build a kind of a picture of what was happening. But we also have seen, you know, like we're watching places like Pinterest and online catalogs of papers that are, you know, documented by libraries and individuals, not necessarily to copy those directly, but to use as inspiration, because we, we do some of that as well. One of our block printed designs is inspired by a French 18th century paper, but and there's carryover in design elements, but it's actually an original design. We carved. So there's a lot, you know, quite a variety. I'm also going, this puts me in the crazy camp, but I'm going through the stacks over here at the local college to, and they have quite a few European books, and the Germans and the Dutch were pretty prolific with their decorated papers. So I'm going through the stacks actually and looking for books that might be good candidates for decorated paper. And you know, after binding for 20 years, I kind of know what styles of binding will have decorated paper because there were trends, you know. And then I'll pull the book off and check them out and do the whole cataloging of it. Mm-hmm. And so it's a slow process, but I'm also learning a lot about, you know, what was going on, and starting to see connections and see where things were produced. And so it's very interesting, but yeah, did I miss anything?
I think that's about, yeah.
It's about.
Cool. So yeah, let's talk about one of your woodblock designs. And I know you have a blog and you've written a little bit and with visual imagery too, portrayed sort of how this is done, but I'd like to talk a little bit about, so first let's start with the paper, because I know you're getting Indian paper, is it, that you're printing on?
Yeah. Currently, sourcing materials is always a challenge. So because the supply all of a sudden cuts out, and then so we have been printing on khadi paper, which is made in India. We're also looking at using Saint Armand in Montreal.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. And those are, they have a variety of papers. One is, one style, of course, is handmade, but they also do make paper on a Ferdinier machine, which is, the early 1800 or the 1800 style.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, we'd like to try those papers as well. And we've looked at, using some more standard papers like Reeves Lightweight or, something like that, which are mold made. So we're kind of seeing what's a good fit, cost, and how well they take a print.
Right. Yeah. And so you do everything from making, carving the blocks to, do you use any digital elements to guide your block carving?
Yeah. So that's kind of my job. I usually end up using InDesign to kind of recreate the design digitally.
Mm-hmm.
And then on a couple occasions, we've sent that digital file to someone else who, was it laser? They laser cut the wood?
Yeah. Actually, mechanically engraved.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Because the design was just too intricate for us to do by hand, and so it was going to break a lot, and so we decided to have someone else do those. Some of them, the most recent one that I've been also working on carving, we found a way to transfer that digital design onto the wood, and then kind of use that to carve it without having all this extra like pencil residue, that sort of thing. So that's been working out fairly well. And then other ones we've gotten made into magnesium blocks.
Okay.
Yeah. So for smaller, I think the only ones we have of those are like 8.5 by 11 size for our notebooks.
Okay.
So a little bit of everything, yeah. Really,
Yeah.
One of the fun things about the transferring the design to the block, I just we print these designs out on plastic, like a Mylar sheet.
Mm-hmm.
Which has been coated with just PVA, a thin coat of PVA that I roll on there.
Uh-huh.
And that keeps the ink from bleeding. And then do the same to the block, roll out PVA onto the block. And while it's wet, we put that plastic sheet down and just rub it with a bone folder and let that sit for a couple hours so it's good and dry.
Mm-hmm.
And then plastic peels right off. And that's kind of nice too, because a lot of times what I've done is taken a design that I've drawn by hand and then in pencil and then with a waxed or a soaped block, rub that design and it transfers. But that also smudges, whereas the glue method doesn't smudge. So
that's a transfer method then.
Yeah.
So the PVA and the image come off.
Yeah.
And then when you're carving, the glue doesn't gum up or get in the way?
I suppose if our hands are wet, but yeah, no, it hasn't been a problem.
No, it seems hasn't been a problem. I think since it's dry enough and the chisels are sharp enough, it just kind of comes right through, and it's such a thin layer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then are you printing sheets in repeat, or are you making the blocks the size of the actual print, like one print, or are you printing multiple times on a sheet?
One.
Okay. So that's on the 12 by 18, you're printing. You're carving a 12 by 18 block.
Yeah.
And how many sheets are you printing at a time?
Depends on the day. some of them, we had a 2-color print that was giving us some trouble, so we'd end up at the end of the day with 5 good ones. We've gotten a lot better through using some jigs that we've come up with to kind of help with alignment and those sort of things. And we've just gotten better at our routine, like, okay, Vernon does this, Madeline does this, and then we kind of repeat. So we kind of shoot for, we have our garage wall on the back, in the back of the shop, and we've hung up a bunch of little clips there, so that's kind of where we hang everything to dry. And I always feel like it's a successful day if we kind of fill that up a good bit.
Mm-hmm. About 60 sheets on the wall, so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And is this a full-time venture for either of you, or do you both do other things?
We both do other things.
Okay.
Still blinding. And then I work at a restaurant part-time, so I, fund my life.
Right.
In the meantime.
Right. Your online shop is really nice looking. Who does that design?
So we had someone, a friend of ours, Michael Van Houten, he kind of did the preliminary stuff with it. Mm-hmm. And then once we launched it in January, I've just done everything else. So I've changed little design things, you know, added, I do most of it now in terms right. of upkeep and that sort of thing. I know a little bit of coding, so that's helped with a lot of that.
Right. And so you're selling the sheets and the notebooks and yes. How's that going? And is it online only? Is that your only marketing ploy right now? Or do you do any other events?
Yeah, mostly we're hoping to do the UICA Holiday Artist Market. That's in the first week of December. It's a kind of gallery. It's the Urban Institute of Contemporary Arts in Grand Rapids. And every winter they do a holiday artist market. So we're hoping to get into that so that we can kind of, we find that our products are way more successful in person because because a lot of them are block printed, people really like to touch them and the texture really gets people in person in a way that the photographs can't quite capture. So we're hoping to do more of those kind of things. I just talked to the owner of a shop in Grand Rapids who is selling only products made by women in the area. And it didn't seem to be a problem that my dad was involved in the process. So I'm going to pursue that a little bit and see if we can kind of get into some smaller shops around. And then, yeah, if people come by the shop for any reason, friends, clients of the bindery, we show them some notebooks and kind of, you know, show people what we're really excited about.
Hey, listeners, let's take a little break here, and I want to tell you about the upcoming 12 Months of Paper notebook that will be coming out this fall. Many of you are familiar with the 12 Months of Paper calendar, a how-to book and calendar featuring a paper project every month. If you've made any of the projects, I'd love for you to post and tag your images at 12 Months of Paper. That's hashtag 12 Months of Paper. And if you haven't made any and you're just curious, you can go to that hashtag and see what people are making. In 2020, I'm changing the format a bit. I'm creating a wire-bound book, still featuring 12 paper projects. And this year, 4 of the projects are designed by guest artists. I can't wait to share those with you. I'm also partnering with Arnold Grummers to include a teeny tiny papermaking kit for making your very own sheets of plantable paper embedded with seeds. Stay tuned for more information, and there will be information about the upcoming edition of this book at bit.ly, that's bit.ly/12monthsofpaper, where you'll also find 2019 calendars available at half price.
Any special projects that have developed out of this? I mean, this is really new. You just started in January, so we'll give it some time, but I'm just curious.
A couple of interesting projects have come out of it. One of my bookbinding clients asked us if we wanted to design a book plate for him. So it's not super complicated, but as far as the design, because he wants a fairly simple and straightforward design, but just getting that execution just right and doing the, you know, getting the typefaces right and how we print it and all that sort of thing. So we've been working on that together. So that I probably came out of this business, Papillon business, because it's a design thing and it probably put this client in mind of us as designers, not just bookbinders. And another project, there's a person who wants to create a, or he's printing a limited edition of, I think it's 17th century poetry, French. And he would like us to do the binding, but also use some of our 18th century style French decorated paper for the, maybe on the covers. We haven't hammered out all the details yet, but so that grew out of this as well and segues with the bindery too.
And then I know you went to Paper World in Frankfurt. Did you both go?
Yes.
I'm curious to hear about that and to hear about how you like I know companies, big companies probably do something along the lines of the fashion world, like planning lines and things like that. And so I want to hear if you have, like, is there every so often that you're releasing a new product or a new design? And so what was the motivation behind going to Paper World, and what did you learn?
Originally, it all kind of started, we'd been wanting to kind of go to the stationery show in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Timing for that wasn't super great. The one in Frankfurt seemed kind of far-fetched at the time, so we didn't really explore that too much. I graduated at Calvin College in December, and I kind of wanted to do a trip to kind of, I don't know, get out of Dodge for a little bit. So I had this whole thing planned, and then I was like, you know, what if I make this more of like a business trip? What could I do to kind of make this more research-based or something to make it more worthwhile than just like a vacation? So I started looking into this Paper World thing a little bit more and realized like that might be something really cool to do and get Dad involved. So we kind of went with a few different goals. One of them was just to go to Germany. We have a lot of German heritage, and so we wanted to kind of, you know, go and check that out. Neither of us had ever been there before. There's a castle there that was, let's see, you should probably explain this one.
Yeah, it was there's a castle where supposedly my great-great-grandfather was either trained, and he was a military type, or maybe he was born there, but it's a famous castle. Castle Hartenfels in Torgau. So we wanted to go there. You can tour it, and it's been restored, especially since the wall went down the last 30 years or so. So we wanted to see that, and none of my family had ever been there, so we put that at the back end of the trip after Paper World.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
And then continue. In terms of Paper World, so we kind of wanted to get a sense of the market, our competition. We didn't end up finding a lot of our competition there. People like Antoinette Poisson, those kind of more artistic printing companies weren't there. A lot more of like pens, products, a lot of really awful wrapping paper. But it was really interesting to kind of get a vibe of like who shows up to these things and that sort of thing. We wanted to make some connections with other people that we found interesting or if their products were compelling. And that was a pretty good success, I think. We made some good connections with different pen companies that we might at some point like to kind of sell their products on our website. Because if you want a notebook, that means you probably want a cool pen to go with it. So we think that would work out fairly well eventually. And then gather some inspiration, you know, by seeing what other people do. We kind of like, oh, never thought of that idea in terms of like certain like calendar types of things or like, you know, things other than just notebooks and sheets. You know, what else can you do with decorated paper? Almost anything. So that was really cool. And then just to see kind of like where we land in all of this. Because we're so small, you know, how do we kind of cater to the larger market or sell our products other than out, like online, that sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and we also wanted to get a vibe, like, do we want to show at a show like this or the New York show? Or do we want to just stick with smaller craft shows or not craft shows, but like art shows or, you know, mm-hmm. In a museum type setting, is that maybe more our thing? So we're just trying to see where we fit and how we move forward in it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's hard. I'm trying to think of comparable companies, and you're right. There aren't that many. I mean, there's some hand paper makers who sell their sheets.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are decorative and, but printed fine papers. Have you connected with any? There's a handful of paper stores around the country. I'm thinking of Oblation Papers and Press in Portland, Oregon, Two Hands Papery here in Colorado. But then Yeah, you did mention wholesale, but I'm not sure what you're wholesaling, because then you have to get into that whole market as well.
Yeah, so it's something we kind of want to get involved in. At this point, because of some of our sourcing stuff, we don't quite have the volume to be able to do serious wholesaling. Right. So I think once we get all that nailed down a little bit more firmly, I'm at least really interested in diving into kind of finding out, like, okay, which stores can we get into? We kind of explored that a lot early on and found that we were way too small for most, like, major stores, quote unquote, to actually take us seriously. We needed more lines, we needed more products, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So now that we're getting closer to that, I think we're starting to swing back around and take another look.
Yeah, we're trying to build up our volume and stock right now. We do what we call design families, and then in each design then has a number of products that go with it. So we'd like to have, you know, at least like 10 before we start thinking about wholesaling. But, you know, from design to production, a lot of yeah, factors that, you know, take time.
Sure. So describe a design family. So it must have different colors, mm-hmm, and what are the products? Products, mm-hmm, colors.
Yeah. So like our French pinwheel design, mm-hmm, we've got 3 different colors. So we have like a red and blue one, a green and orange one, and then kind of like a wine and dove gray kind of combination. And so then we have sheets in all 3 of those different colors, as well as then notebooks in all 3 of those colors.
And the notebooks come in blank grid or lined as well. So okay, large, you know, variety of things within that design.
Mm-hmm. And then we have a colored label that you can also put on there. So there ends up being a lot of options for just, you know, one style of notebook.
Right. Cool. And are you who's producing the notebooks? Do you have those made somewhere?
Right now we're doing it ourselves.
Oh, you are. Okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Eventually when our volume, you know, we could source that out to a more automated, I mean, there's nothing really romantic or compelling about, I stapled this notebook in my shop, you know, I mean, it doesn't really matter. Once the printing is done and, you know, the design and the execution is really neither here nor there. So, you know, the Holland Litho, the company Madeline mentioned, they have a notebook making machine and they can work with our materials. So if we give them the size paper all ready to go, this machine can produce 18,000 notebooks in an hour.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I see what you mean about volume then.
So, yeah. So, you know, we'd need about 5 minutes.
Yeah, right. And who's printing the grid of the inside pages of the notebooks?
So everything is right now, you know, in kind of prototyping, we're trying to get, you know, a number of products going so that we can get our website up. And then as we add, we can add more. But, I've actually had my inkjet printer running nonstop, it makes a really nice grid and a nice soft line, and but it's slow, but it's okay because it, you know, it just runs, and the ink is cheap, so that's nice. But eventually, we'll probably just do that locally here at a print shop. That would save us a little hassle. But right now we're, you know, producing enough just on our inkjet machine.
Cool. And so what's coming up? What was the highlight of your recent staff meeting, your weekly meeting? What's on the docket?
Yeah. So I'm working on carving another woodblock. So I'm continue working on that.
Tell a little bit about where it comes from.
So it's a Japanese design. That was from
a chapbook. Yeah.
Which is a...
Well, so this paper is a... it was like the back cover of an 1845 chapbook from a series.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of, you know, if you Google Japanese woodblock print, most of them are pictorial, but this is actually a geometric design, which is really kind of unique. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Yes. So I'm working on carving that. And then getting in contact with that store that I came across the other day that sold women's art from the area.
Mm-hmm.
So those are kind of my two big things, along with finishing that book plate design in the next couple of weeks. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah. And on my end of things, we're producing a series of spiral notebooks. I like spiral when I'm using design, you know, when I'm doing design work. So I prefer to have something that's not folded, just lays flat. So we've developed two formats, kind of an oblong and then kind of a standard 7x8 or 6x8
mm-hmm.
Or 9, and notebooks with grid, but lines and blank as well. And so we're producing about 5 different patterns on different color or cover options on that.
Yeah.
So we're putting some of those together and we'll be adding those to our website in the next few days. And I'm working on a block as well, another French, what they call domino paper, I guess. It's from an 18th century book, I think 1837, that belongs to the Clements Library. And what was fascinating about this is that the end sheets were all taken, or both end sheets were taken from this one sheet.
Hmm.
So I photographed each of the end sheets and digitized them. Well, I put them on my computer and tried to refit, you know, because there were little bits missing and that mm-hmm. sort of thing. So I kind of fit them together and then printed out a large sheet with that design and then drew in the missing parts. You know, there's a book plate on there, so I had to figure out, you know, or try to redesign those missing parts. So I'm working on that design right now, and then I'd like to, I think that one actually I'm not going to hand carve because there are lots of lines and picotage, the pin designs, like repeated dots. And a lot of those were done with like little nails or pegs.
Uh-huh.
And metal strips would be the lines.
Lines, yeah.
Yeah. And so, well, magnesium is a metal, so I guess we're not too far off there. And then they would be printed in black and then hand-colored. So I don't know what we'll do exactly, if we're going to do all the hand coloring or if we're going to try to figure out a way where we can mechanize the printing. Mm-hmm. So those are little details that we'll be working on. Yeah.
But fun, right?
Yeah, it's super fun.
Yeah.
Cool. Bringing one of these sheets back to life, you know, that's been hidden away in a book for, like, nobody knows about it. It's a really striking design. But it's been hidden, and now it'll come alive again. So we're excited.
Right. And do you, I mentioned your blog, but do you include any kind of, like, how are you telling people about the background behind the particular papers? Are you including that in any packaging or on the blog? Or
yeah. So when we sell a notebook or cards or papers, we have little info cards.
Mm-hmm.
About, I think, like 2x2 inches or something like that. And they have just a little bit of information about where the pattern was from, when it was from, and then a little bit about how it was printed, where it was printed, what the paper is printed on, that sort of thing. And then along with that are basically anytime we release a new product family, so a new pattern, we try to have a blog post ready
mm-hmm.
pretty after that, so that people can read more detail about the patterns that they're seeing.
Right. Yeah. There are like three levels of information, little mm-hmm. info cards. And then the description on the website of each product has a little more information. And then the blog post kind of dives in a little deeper.
Right.
Some more than others, but as much as we can. So that requires, you know, some research, and I try to build some historical context and what was going on at the time, and or maybe I talk about the process. Mostly I do the blog posting, blog
mm-hmm.
writing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get you this. Yeah. And so I'll do, you know, research on production methods or cultural points or economic, you know, just anything that might be of interest as it relates to the design in the paper.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's been really fun learning about your business, and I look forward to following it in the coming years and maybe following up with you. Where can people find you online?
Yeah, so it's at papillonpapers.com. So Papillon is French for butterfly, mm-hmm. spelled P-A-P-I-L-L-O-N. Yeah, that's kind of our... And we also have an Instagram, which is papillon-papers. So we post a lot of updates there when we're prototyping, that sort of thing. So if people are looking for a little bit more, you know, what's going on right now in the world of Papillon, that's a good place for people to look.
Right. And I forgot to ask you about the inspiration behind the name of the company.
Oh, yeah. So I that word just popped into my head one night. I couldn't sleep. And I was thinking about, you know, starting this business. This was a couple of years ago already, I guess. And the word was like really clear in my head. And I thought, what is that? I didn't even know what it meant. And so the next day I looked it up and, oh, it was butterfly. I thought it was like Spanish and I didn't even know. So then I thought, oh, well, that has a nice ring, Papillon Papers. That could work. So that's where the name started. But what was interesting is that same week I had been looking at a particular decorated sheet that had a butterfly in it. And as well, I was doing some research about early wallpapers. In a book called The Papered Wall, I think that was called, and reading about one of the early engravers, 18th century engraving and decorated paper family, and their name was, as it turns out, Papillon. So there were all these things and other stuff too that kind of all converged to make this a clear, you know.
Yeah.
So that's how that came.
Very cool. Well, thanks so much for sharing your story on Paper Talk.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Yes, it was a pleasure. Okay. Thanks.
Yep. Bye.
Hey, paper friends. Did you know that I write a weekly blog called The Sunday Paper, featuring stories of people doing exciting, innovative, and beautiful things with paper? Sign up at helenhebertstudio.com/blog. I'm also creating a lot of content over here, and the best way to stay up to date is to join my newsletter list to learn about free tutorials, online classes, workshops, and the annual Redcliffe Paper Retreat, which takes place right here at Helen Hebert Studio. You can sign up at helenhebertstudio.com to receive my e-newsletter. This wraps up our episode, and if you enjoyed it, I'd appreciate it if you could leave a review over on iTunes. This helps other people find out about the podcast. Special thanks to Gary A. Hansen for the sound editing and Peter Thomas for the music. Visit helenhebertstudio.com and click on Paper Talk, where you can find out more about them, subscribe to the series via iTunes, and listen to other episodes and access all of the archived shows. I'll talk to you soon.